This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football or betting insight. There's been Champions League action to look back on, and we'll also be getting the thoughts of Mark ahead of a brilliant weekend of Premier League football. And we'll be welcoming Dan Childs to the show for his thoughts on the EFL. It's Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon with you this week. Thanks once again for tuning in. Mark, how's things?
I've been better, Jack. I'm a bit wet, a bit miserable, a bit tired, a bit angry, a bit emotional. It's not a good time, is it, to be a Spurs fan this week?
As I was tuning into the game last night, I don't really care for either side, I must be honest, but I was hoping that your boys would win just so I could catch you happy and jubilant on a Thursday morning. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case, was it?
No, it wasn't. I mean, first of all, I thought it was a dreadful tie. Milan, obviously, it's a big result for them in the Champions League quarterfinals. Haven't got sort of much money, they're not the team that I think people remember when they were kind of, dominating sort of Europe or sort of, knocking on the door of European finals. I mean, they're not very good. And Tottenham were even worse. I mean, I was at the game, it was cold, it was wet. The football was absolutely dire. And then outside the stadium after the game, I'd say large sections sort of started singing the Mauricio Pochettino song. It feels like the end game for Antonio Conte. Obviously been a bad sort of 8 or 9 days with going out of the FA Cup, going out of the Champions League with a whimper as well. I think if you're at home, the atmosphere was good before the game started, but the football just, it just killed the atmosphere because you're just watching absolutely nothing. And then I was on a late train home back to where I live, sat next to what I thought was a respectable... first of all, I was on a train full of Dizzy Rascal fans because Dizzy Rascal had been playing at the O2. I sat next to what I thought was a respectable businessman who then proceeded to start throwing up into his Burger King bag, or at least attempting... to throw up. I sort of had the AirPods on and was trying not to look and wasn't sure whether to move. There was like a tiny gap between us, like a seat between us. Yeah, it was, feeling sick from seeing Tottenham's Champions League exit, then feeling sick from seeing somebody that had far too much alcohol on a night out in London. So, what a miserable couple of days. At least Norwich are playing a bit better, Jack. Cheer me up.
We're flying. We're absolutely flying under Wagner. I think top six is probably on at the moment. A big win at the Den on Saturday. I was there cheering on the boys. Nothing's really changed at Millwall, let's put it that way. But an enjoyable day out nonetheless. You do make me giggle there. But those late trains departing from London are just the worst of society, aren't they?
Mishmashed together. Yeah, you've got everything on them. Like I say, you've got your Tottenham fans, you've got your Dizzy Rascal fans.
What's the demographic of a Dizzy Rascal fan nowadays?
It was really strange. I mean, first of all, Dizzy, as I like to call him, he was we were at the same school.
Really?
He didn't stay with me. Dizzy Rascal, Ledley King, the three most famous people, I think, to come out of it. I think he was expelled fairly early on. In terms of the demographic, it was. It really strange because you've got kind of the older generation that sort of were with him first time around that are trying to relive their youth. And then I saw, even some like 10, 11 year olds dressed in the baseball caps, picked up the Dizzy Rascal sort of second time around. So, you had them. A miserable night. And then I hadn't seen, obviously, the Bayern Munich versus Paris Saint-Germain game, but that cheered me up a little bit, I think, seeing PSG go out. Every time that happens, I always feel a little bit warmed by the fact that the Champions League just absolutely destroys them, season after season after season. But a big win for Bayern Munich and, you know, all of a sudden they're looking very strong, aren't they, in terms of, you know, potentially winning Champions League.
Absolutely. You echo the thoughts there of Jamie Carragher. I saw him speaking about PSG's exit from the competition and said he was delighted about it, saying that it's simply a team made of individuals. In terms of Mbappe at PSG, Mark, I mean, surely he must be thinking about moving on, because it's unlikely he's going to win a major tournament there at the moment.
Well, I mean, he is from Paris. He's a Paris Saint-Germain supporter. They will, you know, go again. They'll look to bring in probably a different manager. And I don't know. And if he gets the right power and the right sort of backing, I'm not sure that he necessarily needs to leave. I mean, they're still a very talented team of individuals, I should say, really, you know, when you put them down one by one. So, I mean, I look around. I mean, you know, where would he go? Maybe Real Madrid. I don't know if he's burned his bridges a touch with them after sort of not going previously. I mean, he'd have more of a chance maybe at Real Madrid, but I don't think it's that big a difference really between them and Paris Saint-Germain, particularly when you think of Benzema's getting on, Modric, you know, Kroos. That team's going to need a bit of a rebuild, and maybe
could they be replacing maybe a Modric with a Bellingham though?
Yeah, maybe. And yeah, potentially you've got more chance of winning it at Real Madrid. I just think that Paris Saint-Germain need to get away from, you know, the kind of superstar attitude that they've had. And I felt like they were trying to do that. And if they can, you know, if they can build a team around Mbappe, the amount of money that they've got, I still think they'd be able to attract sort of top talent. You've got Donnarumma in goal, you know, Marquinhos at the back's a fabulous player. So I don't think Mbappe needs to leave Paris Saint-Germain to win the Champions League. I think Paris Saint-Germain just need to change their attitude to the fact that football is very much a team game rather than you know, individuals. And I think we saw that even on the Tuesday night, didn't we? With Chelsea, you know, beating Borussia Dortmund and deserving to go through, and now they're in a Champions League quarterfinal. Who knows? You know, if they get sort of Milan in the quarterfinals, they'd really fancy their chances of going through, and then all of a sudden you could be, you know, in a semi-final, and Graham Potter was getting the sack and was being told he was useless a week ago. But Chelsea are still a team of individuals, and it will take time for them to become a team. And it doesn't matter how much money you spend, like, football is a team sport, and individuals get you so far. But in terms of the very biggest prizes in club football, I would say it's about a team more than anything else. Real Madrid, when they had the Galacticos, didn't win as much as when they toned it down, you know, and that they had kind of the hard workers alongside them. And I think that will just be forever more. You need to be a team. And I think you're seeing Paris Saint-Germain just still aren't one.
Absolutely. Just a quick word there, Mark, on Chelsea, who turned around a first leg deficit against Borussia Dortmund. 2-0 winners, Sterling and Havertz with the goals on the night. Not only a huge win for Chelsea, but a big win for Graham Potter as well.
Yeah, of course. You know, because he just needs, you know, he's got the backing and the belief of the owners. But we've said this before on here, that's nothing if the fans want you out and sort of make it clear. So a Champions League run, I think, just calms everything down. And at least now I think you're starting to see what his vision is in terms of what his team might look like. You know, the front three has stayed the same, isn't it? Felix. And did you notice that Felix was on the sort of press conference, said his name's not Felix, it is Felix. So we'll have to try to get used to saying
Felix
differently. Yeah, it's like two L's almost like fell and then X. He said people got it wrong in Spain and they're getting it wrong in England. And could they stop? I Felix is much easier to say. That's the problem. But you've got him, Sterling and Havertz. That now looks like it's Chelsea's or Graham Potter's preferred front three. And so they'll need time now to get their combinations going. Havertz had a great game, I thought, against Borussia Dortmund. One of the best I've seen him play for Chelsea. Sterling scored a very important goal. Still not entirely sure about his composure in the box and some of his runs. You know, he's caught offside a lot when I felt like the space was there to not keep getting caught offside. But at least you're starting to see those combinations. Chilwell and James make a big difference when They're the wing backs as well. So it's not perfect. You know, Chelsea shouldn't be in mid-table. And, you know, it's not some fairy tale story that they've beaten injury hit Borussia Dortmund. But it was a really big win for Graham Potter. And there seems to be plenty of goodwill in the media, I think, towards Potter. And that will, I think that will annoy some Chelsea fans, you know, those that are not Potter believers. But I think it's just genuinely because he's a nice bloke. And, you know, you want to see people like that do well, don't you?
Absolutely. If there was one game that you wanted goals from, then Benfica Club Brugge was the game for you on Tuesday night. Benfica, a good story, Mark. I mean, seemingly just endless, you know, promising youngsters coming through their academy at the moment. And Scott Parker's Club Brugge was the latest victim to them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Club Brugge did well to reach the last 16 and... You know, they were outclassed, but I thought Benfica, some of the football Benfica played was
lovely,
just,
wasn't it?
Yeah, just absolutely brilliant. And they're still a team you're going to want to draw in the quarterfinals because they're not as good as Bayern Munich or something like that. But, you know, they've got the potential to cause an upset against, you know, a sort of more elite team. Rafa Silva, just a magical player in that sort of midfield position, just off the front. Gonçalo Ramos that we saw at the World Cup looks, you know, just frightening in attack. Got, you know, assists and goals. There's a guy at centre-half that sort of a lot of scouts are watching, Silva as well, alongside the more robust Otamendi. They do look very good. I mean, this is a team, let's not forget, that drew twice with Paris Saint-Germain in the group stage. And just going, if we kind of end it, the Champions League chat back on Paris Saint-Germain rather than Tottenham, if we can, because I feel like I'm just all Tottenham down. If Paris Saint-Germain would have won the group, they could have ended up with, say, a Club Brugge in the last 16. They threw it away and Benfica went on that mad rampage and sort of overtook the goal difference on match day 6. And those fine lines, you know, give yourself the best opportunity to win the Champions League by winning your group. I all these people that say it doesn't matter. Look, it might not. You might finish sort of second in your group and get an easy game. You might finish top and get a hard one like Bayern Munich did. But you need to give yourself the best opportunity to win it. And I just feel like Paris Saint-Germain don't do that. And their attitude stinks at times. You know, they just don't take it seriously enough.
Absolutely. Well, it was a very fun week of Champions League football. Let's move on to the Premier League action. Our match of the day this week, Fulham against Arsenal, Sunday, 2 o'clock. Fulham 5-1, Arsenal 4-7, 16-5, the draw. Mark, we talk about Spurs struggling at the moment, Arsenal far from it. Just finding ways to win, another huge win last week.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the Seven Sisters Road is quite a long one. Anybody that's ever tried to walk it will testify to that. But at one end of it, you know, there's misery. And at the other end, you know, jubilation, Arteta, you know, the team, the fans are all pulling in the same direction. And, you know, it was an astonishing sort of moment, really, that Reece Nelson, was it 98th, 97th minute?
What a lovely winner. Strike as well.
It was, you know... Broke Bournemouth hearts, probably broke Man City hearts as well. It felt like it was much later in the season, didn't it? The celebrations, I'm not having to go, there have been some people having to go at Arsenal for sort of premature celebrations. I mean, it felt like you had to go crazy, but it did feel like the kind of goal you score in May when everybody just goes bonkers. But I think that just goes to show how important it was, because it would have been a real body blow to have, you know, to have dropped points at home to Bournemouth. And then, you know, from 2-0 down, they've managed to rescue that situation. They want to go, they want to make that Man City away game not be all important, don't they? That's the key for Arsenal. They don't want to be in a position where it's down to 3 points, you know, by the time City get to, you know, get them at the Etihad and potentially overhaul them, because psychologically that will feel, I feel like a significant moment in the title race. As long as they've got that buffer, that Etihad match doesn't matter so much, and they can go there and attack it in a way that, knowing if they win it, that might be the title. And if they lose it, you know, it's not, it's still in their hands. So It was really important. I think there are maybe longer term question marks about Arsenal's form at the moment, because they left it very late against Aston Villa. They drew against Brentford when there was a lot of controversy over Brentford's equalising goal, but Arsenal didn't play well in that game, did they? And then, you know, they've obviously found themselves in a position where they were 2-0 down against Bournemouth at home, which is not something you would expect, really, of a team that's top of the table. So maybe longer term, Arteta might just be worried about the amount of goals they're conceding in certain matches and the fact that they're having to go to the well and you know, keep on rescuing the situation. On the plus side, you know, it's not looking like that there's a problem with their kind of mentality to finish off the job and to keep going. And there's a lot to be said for that, I think, in a title race, that you know you can score late goals.
I think you're bang on, Mark. It does feel strange that we're kind of, you know, March, Cheltenham's coming up next week, and yet there's still so much of the Premier League to go. You just assume a 5-point lead at this time in the year, you're probably kind of in a comfortable position, but it can all change so fast. Just in terms of kind of Arsenal at the moment, there's been a lot of talk in the week. You need luck to win a league title because the season is so long, but lots of things are just falling for them at the moment, aren't they? It's, you know, certain injuries to opposition players, late goals, just everything's just falling into place at the moment.
Don't want to sound like a bitter Spurs fan, but I remember when they played Brighton, McAllister and Caicedo were missing, weren't they? Fulham, Paulinho is out of this game. But Arsenal will point, and you know, a lot of their fans have been, you know, felt they've had a hard, you know, been hard done by VAR. So maybe these things, you know, just even themselves out to some extent over a season. Maybe tiny bits of rubber and green are going their way. And I certainly think from an injury point of view, now they've missed Gabriel Jesus, and, you know, they've still managed to hold on, you know, to their lead at the top without him, and that now he's on his way back. I suppose the question mark would be that, is it lucky, you know, to the two centre-halves have been available, haven't they, for, you know, for virtually the whole season, really. You know, Odegaard has been there. Yeah, Saka, Martinelli, been no real injuries, I suppose, to those players. But, I mean, you could argue that that's good coaching, good strength and conditioning, you know, doing all the right things. I feel like I'll sound too bitter if I start pointing, you know, to the good fortune that Arsenal are getting. I'll let other people maybe suggest that. But, I mean, what I would say about Arsenal is I don't think they've had much bad luck. Whether you can say they've been lucky is maybe a different story. They haven't had loads of things go against them yet, and maybe they won't. I think people waited for Leicester, didn't they? For, you know, and Arsenal were obviously better than that Leicester team in terms of kind of pedigree and stuff like that. And it just never happened. And eventually, Leicester won it quite comfortably. Maybe it'll be the same for Arsenal.
Let's take a look at Fulham, who've had a brilliant season as well. They currently sit seventh. Now, I guess the question on everyone's lips is whether they'll get into Europe. It was a quite big defeat to Brentford in terms of the league positioning. Fulham sits seventh on 39 points. They're above both Brighton and Brentford, but Brighton have three games in hand on them, 1 point behind. Brentford have two games in hand on them, also 1 point behind. So it's quite stacked in and around there, Mark. But the fact that we're even talking about a possible European qualification for Fulham shows just how well they've done.
Yeah, I think in terms of, you know, maybe Europa League or the Europa Conference, the defeat to Brentford was a significant one, you know, 6-pointer in that regard. Yeah, I think they'll fall away a touch between now and the end of the season. Their expected goals is kind of a bottom half team, not in terms of relegation or anything like that, but they are seen to be punching above their weight. And I think that is factored into the market. Like last week, I just felt that they were too big to avoid defeat against Brentford. But I think those that are kind of married to expected goals would have been backing Brentford in that game, because there's kind of a negative vibe about Fulham in terms of whether that they can keep this run sort of sustainable, because underlying data isn't the best. I tend to think that there are teams like that, actually, that I quite like backing, because They're still well organised and difficult to beat, and they kind of play a way that I think they know that it's not like the kind of they're playing and they're getting dominated because, you know, they're not very good. I think they kind of allow the other team sort of a certain amount of control in games and then look to do their thing. And I think kind of teams like Fulham that with that style of play, expected goals is always probably lower than the league position, because it's more a stylistic thing, in my opinion.
In terms of this match then, Mark, where are you placing your money?
I'm going to go for Arsenal to win by one goal. Seven of Fulham's nine defeats in the Premier League have been by one goal this season. When they do lose, it's often narrowly. Palhinha's suspension is a big one for them. But in terms of Arsenal, we have already spoke about it. Yes, they're winning games, but I would just be slightly concerned how late they left it against Villa and Bournemouth, to consider that this is an absolute easy game for Arsenal, you know, odds of 4-7, to win the game. So I think they'll do it, but it might be another nervy finish for the Arsenal supporters.
OK, let's get into the rest of the Premier League action. Saturday, 12:30, Bournemouth hosting Liverpool. Mark, I'm surprised we've got sort of 20 minutes into this podcast without speaking about Liverpool's 7-0 win over Manchester United last weekend. Just the most remarkable collapse from United. I mean, first half was fairly even, and then goodness knows what happened in that second 45.
Yeah, my dad rang me up. I thought he'd been out for dinner, and he said, "Oh, did it finish 4-0? I said, no, it was 7. And he just kept saying the score over and over, like he just couldn't compute that Manchester United had been beaten 7-0. And then I think that was how it felt for for many people. And also sort of the Sky coverage afterwards, I understand that, like, Keane and particularly Neville were hurting because it's humiliating to lose 7-0. But I felt there was an overreaction to it. It was remarkable, but I don't think it sort of suddenly means that, you know, Liverpool are back to their best and, you know, back to kind of, you know, the near 100-point sort of team that Klopp had built. And I don't think that it's sort of, you know, United in a tailspin. Just a crazy second half. It can happen in football. When Liverpool did only have 8 shots on target for the 7-0. And of course, you know, the fans are going to crow about it and it will hurt United as much as it will excite the Liverpool fans. But in terms of bigger picture, I almost want to sort of put a line through the game. I felt for 43 minutes, I felt that United edged the game. And then after 50 minutes, the game was over. And what happened, I think, in the last 30 minutes was unacceptable from United, because once it gets to like 4, you just sit in and make...
Well, I think that's the thing that particularly Roy Keane was so frustrated about. And Gary Neville, I thought the criticism of Bruno Fernandes was fair as well. I mean, if you're, you know, a United fan watching your side and you're 5-0 down, to then see one of your apparent stars throwing their arms around, it's just not a good look, more than anything. I just thought it was really poor.
It was. I mean, Bruno Fernandes always annoys me. I think he's one of the most annoying players in the Premier League. So, or even beyond, he's just one of the most annoying players in world football. But yeah, I still think he cares. I mean, Lisandro Martinez has done great in recent months. He didn't have a good game. You know, Luke Shaw didn't have a good game. Rafael Varane was terrible for that opening goal. Casemiro, I'm not sure if he was injured, because the camera showed him sort of, even when it was 0-0, him not sort of being happy with his body. So I think United collapse is maybe the sort of unacceptable aspect of that. But like I said, bigger picture, I don't want to read too much into it. I was delighted for Cody Gakpo, you know, because I think you need a game like that, don't you? When you're a new player, he's obviously... You know, he has scored now, but to get a couple of goals like the way and the manner of his goals against Manchester United, that really just takes the pressure off now, I think, for rest of the season for him. You know, he can really just sort of learn what it means to be a Liverpool player. And I think that that's his role in the team. I, And I'm really pleased. I get so much wrong. But I went on TalkSport on New Year's Day and they asked me what, you know, what I thought Gakpo, his position would be for Liverpool. And I was convinced then that he was Firmino's replacement. And I mean, that is his best position in that Liverpool team. So great win for Liverpool, terrible defeat for Manchester United. But bigger picture, I don't think it suddenly says a lot about either team.
No, I think you're right. I'd say if you're a Liverpool fan, the pleasing thing was probably you look at that front three of kind of Salah, Gakpo and Nunez and go, it was probably the first time we saw a decent game and transitioning from Mane, Firmino and Salah, because, you know, so much of Liverpool's good work was thanks to those front three. And they've not really been clicking this season so far, but there was something cohesive about that performance. And I must say a word for Darwin Nunez, who's quickly becoming one of my favourite players in the Premier League. I mean, he's chaotic. He's got that needle that you want from one of your players. I really enjoy watching him. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to describe him is a Uruguayan. And I think that kind of all of it feels like all of the Uruguayan footballers, they've just built like that. You know, I think probably because it's a small country, they punch above their weight internationally. They do see themselves very much as an underdog, but one that can achieve. And, you know, it's just like this warrior spirit that you seem to find in sort of a lot of Uruguayan footballers, don't you? You know, and so he's got, I mean, he's obviously a completely different player to Luis Suarez, but he's got that kind of, you know, I suppose just ability to just keep going and keep trying and keep wanting to improve. And yeah, I absolutely love watching him as well. I think, you know, it could have a field day as well against Bournemouth.
Let's talk about this game then. Bournemouth obviously struggling this season and probably not wanting to face Liverpool after what we just talked about.
Yes, I'm going to go for Liverpool to win and over 2.5 goals for many of the reasons you mentioned there about the, you know, the Liverpool front three clicking. They are on a good run of clean sheets in the Premier League as well. I mean, United could easily have scored in that game. And Bournemouth, their XG in the last six games has been 7.3. So it's been a tough run of fixtures, includes Brighton, Newcastle, Man City and Arsenal. So, you know, while they lost that game, I think they can take a lot from what happened at the Emirates. And since they improved the team in January, they have looked better. So, look, this is a game where Liverpool could win and clear the line themselves. But I wouldn't be that surprised if Bournemouth got on the score sheet just to help this bet over the line.
Okay, good stuff. Let's move on to the 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday. We'll start with Everton against Brentford. We spoke there of Liverpool, Man United being a good game. I thought Everton against Forest last Sunday was a cracker as well. It was a 2-2 draw there. Everton did take the lead on two occasions. Forest pinned them back. Everton would have been desperate for 3 points there, Mark, considering they host a Brentford side who are going well.
Yeah, unbeaten in 12, Brentford. I suppose I disagree slightly about the sort of desperation for the need to win against Forest for Everton.
Having taken the lead twice, I mean, surely a point is disappointing.
Yeah, maybe it's disappointing, but once it went to 2-2, it looked like they'd settled for it. So I don't think they were that gutted. I think what they desperately want is to get Calvert-Lewin back fit, so they've got a focal point up front. In terms of this game, I'm going to go for a draw. I think that Everton have still got issues. You know, Dyche can get them as organised as Sean Dyche can, but the quality just isn't really there for me to consider backing them to beat this Brentford team that's in a good run. I would just say about Brentford that they did share the spoils against Forest and against Leeds. And actually the expectation maybe is on them now to try to win some of these away games, and not easy to win away from home in the Premier League. I think Thomas Frank, I'm not saying he'd settle for a point, gladly, but I don't think he'd be gutted if he got a point from Goodison. And Everton, I think, are just looking to keep that league sort of table points-wise just ticking over. Just don't think they've got the quality to win the game.
Okay, let's move on to Leicester against Chelsea. Leicester in some poor form at the moment. Four straight defeats, if we include cup competitions as well.
They're in the bad books. They're in the bad books after last week. I was very confident that with them against Southampton. I mean, Iheanacho missed enough chances, didn't he? We'll put him definitely.
And Maddison was playing as well, so there's not even that excuse.
Yeah, you can't say that. I mean, obviously, could have got a point right at the end, Suter, you know, smack the bar or whatever. But no, you're absolutely right. We've got a feature, which will be on racingpost.com on Friday and also in the newspaper on Friday, having a look at the relegation picture, because it's absolutely mad at the moment. Sort of 8 or 9 teams that could conceivably be relegated, and Leicester are one of those. You know, they're too good to go down, I thought, for a long time. But, you know, if you're still down there, you know, come Cheltenham time, then you're not, are you? Not too good to go down.
Will Chelsea feel like they can put together a little run here after their win in midweek?
Maybe. I mean, I would still like to see it before you truly believe it. You'd want to see kind of, you know, a proper run. I mean, the way I was looking at this game was under 2.5 goals. 15 of the Chelsea's last 17 games have been under 2.5 goals. And actually, Leicester, they had a couple of crazy games, didn't they? You know, Villa and also Tottenham and Manchester United, where it was end-to-end. But if you look at some of their home games against the bigger teams, I know Chelsea are lower down, but I think Brendan Rodgers will still consider Chelsea to be, you know, that kind of elite opponent. And let's not forget, they're in the Champions League quarterfinals. He kept it very tight against Manchester City and against Arsenal, and they lost both of those games 1-0. So, yeah, I thought not often I would sort of back the unders in a Leicester game, but this might be one of those occasions.
Let's take a look at Leeds against Brighton. With each week that passes, Mark, you just look at Brighton and go, yeah, they're the real deal. Another big win last week.
Yeah, absolutely legitimate top four contenders. You know, I don't see any reason for Brighton to fear Tottenham or Newcastle. Liverpool, different matter, and yeah, Liverpool are a team that could go on a run themselves. But yeah, Brighton are just a very good team, putting up really big numbers. You know, playing delightful football under De Zerbi. Was absolutely not surprised that they took West Ham to the cleaners last week. I'm not saying they'll thrash Leeds, but I thought that they were a fair enough price to win at Elland Road. They've won 8 of their last 12 matches. And if you have a look at sort of games that they, even ones they didn't win, like against Palace and Fulham, absolutely dominated the game. And more often than not, from the amount of chances and shots that they had, they would have won those fixtures as well. So, you know, playing great football, lovely to watch. I wonder if Daniel Levy's got De Zerbi's phone number.
Well, you'll be hoping so. It's Forest at the weekend, Mark. Confident of a win or another difficult day in North London?
I think it'll be a difficult day because the fans have turned on Conte, you know, turned on the team, and therefore home advantage isn't amazing. But I've said this, you know, I'm repeating myself from what I said last few weeks. The market doesn't like Tottenham, and so opposing them is actually quite difficult because you know, the bookmakers want to be against Spurs. And so in the end, I just fell on sort of Tottenham to win and under 3.5 goals. I mean, look, Forest away from home have been, you know, quite frankly, absolutely rubbish. 3 away goals in 12 road trips. I like Johnson, as everybody else seems to. I actually think Gibbs White is different class. And
yeah, I agree.
I think he'll end up, you know, I know Forest have won a European Cup in their past, but I could easily see him sort of moving on to, you know, to wealthier clubs pretty soon, actually. You know, maybe not in this summer, but in the next year or two. But it's not happening for them away from home. And, you know, they were absolutely tonked by a really poor West Ham team on their last road trip. So, it's not with any confidence that I say Tottenham and under 3.5 goals, but it just felt like a sort of low-scoring game that Tottenham probably edge.
One evening game on the Saturday sees Crystal Palace hosting Manchester City. We speak of teams, Mark. It feels a theme in this podcast that are maybe struggling slightly. And you mentioned they're the piece that's going up on the relegation battle. I think you can definitely include Crystal Palace in that. They host Manchester City this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the midst of a horrendous run of fixtures where it just seems to be playing like good teams week after week. And I think it gets easier sort of after the international break time. There is a period where, you know, those last matches look winnable. The problem is that confidence has gone and all of a sudden you're in sort of 16th, 17th. It becomes a different ball game, doesn't it, to try to win those games. I think that the piece that Simon Giles has written actually alludes to the fact that there's a drop-off at Palace that is similar to the one that Patrick Vieira suffered in his second season at Nice. A link there, possibly. Underlying numbers, not good for Crystal Palace. I mean, I said it the other week, I'm just not sure what they're good at. And, you know, they've got dribblers in the team, don't seem to have anybody that actually links the play, to get the ball forward. Defensively, they're okay. And that's what leading me to the Man City to win and under 3.5 goals. Obviously, I don't think City are playing, their best stuff by any stretch of the imagination at the moment, but they might not need to. And 9 of Palace's 11 defeats have been under 3.5 goals. They don't appear to have that much in their locker, but I'm always wary of backing City to win to nil, just because they can doze off right at the end if things are wrapped up. Hopefully it doesn't happen this time.
Yeah, absolutely. 4 games on the Sunday. We've already previewed Fulham against Arsenal. So let's take a look at Manchester United against Southampton. United fans will certainly be hoping that it wasn't an overreaction, or it was an overreaction to the 7-0 defeat. They've got Southampton this Sunday, Mark.
Yeah, we're speaking before the Betis game, and that will hopefully enable them to, just get whatever kind of fog they've got in their minds out of the system. Southampton at home, I mean, you could argue it's the easiest game in the Premier League for any team. Maybe it's Bournemouth at home, but, it's one of those two, isn't it, I think, at the moment, sort of them. United have won 15 and drawn 1 of their last 16 at home before this Betis game. I was looking at United to win and over 2.5 goals, a bet that would have collected, again, we're speaking before the Betis game, but in 12 of their last 14 home matches. So United to win and over 2.5. Those 3 points were huge for Southampton against Leicester. But if they give up the kind of opportunities that Iheanacho didn't take, you'd expect a Rashford or somebody of that calibre to do more damage.
Okay, let's take a look at West Ham against Aston Villa, also Sunday, 2:00. West Ham and a spot of bother.
Yeah, I mean, Jekyll and Hyde team where they seem to do their best work at home and, no show after no show away from home. Fans are currently enjoying, though, the away trip because they're in Ayanapa, aren't they? They've got Larnaca
in the
Europa Conference League. I'm not sure what team Moyes is going to pick. I mean, this has to be, I would have thought, the priority. But I'm just not convinced by West Ham at the moment. So I was going to go for Aston Villa plus 0.25 on the Asian handicap. So you win small if it's a draw. You obviously get the full win if Aston Villa win. Half your bet is on draw, no bet. And half of your bet is on Aston Villa plus 0.5 goal. So if you have a look at Villa's last 12 games in the Premier League, the only teams they've lost to Leicester, which was the real poor result in that time. The only other teams to beat them, Liverpool, City and Arsenal, the best 3 teams in the league, I think it's fair to say. I suppose Man United might have something to say about that as well. But three of the best 4 teams in the league, let's put it that way. And West Ham are not that.
One more Premier League game to preview. That's 4:30 on Sunday. Newcastle take on Wolves. In terms of Newcastle, obviously a good season nonetheless, but just struggling to win games over the past month or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm going for a draw at St James's. I mean, in the last 8, they've only beaten Southampton. They've only scored 13 goals in 15 matches since the World Cup. So
feels like that's gone under the radar ever so slightly.
Yeah, it's all been brought to the attention more now, isn't it? And, Callum Wilson, definitely since the World Cup, hasn't played his best football. Wondering if it's time for Isak to be given a chance in attack or maybe both of them. Yeah, I mean, I suppose there was always likely to be some regression. They were punching slightly, weren't they, when they were they were flying high, in my opinion, that, you know, now they've got an opportunity still, though, to get fourth, because, you know, Tottenham haven't taken, you know, full advantage. Liverpool are on the rise, but they're still, I think Eddie Howe needs to tell the players, you know, we would have settled for this position when the season started. We need to go again. The problem is, I do think that confidence has become an issue. Wolves were really bad in the first half against Tottenham last week. Changed formation, managed to win the game in the end. You know, I'm not saying that I fancy them to win this game, but I think we know what they'll do. They'll look to frustrate Newcastle, and are Newcastle good enough to break them down? On recent evidence, I think that's at least questionable.
There we go. That's your Premier League card marked. Time to dip into the EFL with Dan Childs.
So how many bets have we got this weekend, Dan?
I've got the three bets this week. One will be Michael Carrick related.
Let's start Carrick.
I mean, Middlesbrough away to Swansea this weekend. I mean, funny enough, both possession based sides, but one seems to be possession with a purpose, and the other one, you know, certainly not. I mean, it's Middlesbrough under Carrick, quite incredible, really, when you think about. You know, the run they've been on. He's had 19 games in charge. They've got 43 points. I mean, if you carry on at that rate, they are going to put pressure on Sheffield United, I think, in the race for the top two. There's 7 points behind them at the moment. But, I mean, they've got so many goal threats. Tuba Akpom, 21 goals, leading the championship scoring charts. You've got Marcus Force, Riley McGree, Cameron Archer all chipping in as well. So there's goals from lots of areas of the pitch. They're easy on the eye, good team to watch, but there's a purpose, as I said, to them. And that's kind of the difference between them and Swansea, who they are the top possession-based team in the Championship, Swansea, even more than Burnley. But, you know, they're down in 17th in the league and seem to be getting worse rather than getting better. They've got 4 points, Swansea, from the last seven games. Probably a good thing that they're still 11 points clear of the relegation zone, because the run that they're on, you know, otherwise they'd be in big trouble. I think they're probably going to have to be a rethink there at the end of the season, whether it's change the personnel because they're not suited to the manager, Russell Martin's style of play, or maybe change the manager and get someone else in that works better with the players. But no, Middlesbrough for me, I mean, their odds against to win this game, that looks a great bet to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch all of Swansea's games, but it feels like he has lost some important players, and if the investment's not there, then
didn't help him. I mean, in January he was expecting to refresh the squad, and nobody came in. So yeah, in his defence, that certainly didn't help.
Okay, and I know you've been struggling this week with illness, so we won't keep you too long, Dan. But you've got two other bets for us.
Yep, two other bets. Got both in League One. Start off with Charlton at home to Accrington. Bit of discontent at Charlton at the moment, but I do think they'll get a win this weekend. You look at their recent kind of run, they've had 1 point in four games, but you look at who they've played in those matches. They've gone to Peterborough, got a 0-0 draw. They lost 2-0 at Derby, lost 2-0 at Plymouth, and lost 1-0 at home to Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, they're all, you know, very strong teams in League One, so it's kind of understandable you'd struggle in those matches. I still think Charlton will be looking to push up towards the top half by the end of the season, and this is a game, really, I think, a great chance to get back on track. Accrington sort of hovering, you know, around the relegation zone, had a lot of injuries for the last couple of months, lost 3-0 at Ipswich on Tuesday. I mean, no disgrace in that, but Lucas Jensen, the goalkeeper, was sent off towards the end of the game. I've watched a lot of Accrington's highlights recently, and he was a keeper who used to be at Burnley. He's been absolutely outstanding for them recently. He's helped them get quite a few sort of draws here and there, and for him to be missing will be a massive blow for them, I feel. So Charlton to win that one at home to Accrington.
I say we've got Middlesbrough, we've got Charlton, and the final one.
Final one, go with Sheffield Wednesday, League One leaders, away to 10th place Portsmouth. Still a bit of a shade of odds against around here for Sheffield Wednesday, which I think is a great bet. I mean, they're on 74 points from 33 games, Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, actually only puts them level with Plymouth at the moment, although they have got two games in hand. But that record of points, you average that out, if they carry on at that same rate, they're going to get over 100 points for the season, which is, you know, would be a fantastic effort. They look the best team for me in League One, strong in all areas. Barry Bannon always catches the eye, especially in midfield, pulling the strings. He's a player certainly above the level. He's played in the Premier League. He's looked a very good player in the Championship. In League One, it's almost just not fair on the opposition, really. And they're unbeaten in 21 league games. Sheffield Wednesday going from strength to strength. And Portsmouth, they've picked up a bit under kind of rookie manager gone in there, John Mussino. He's had a decent start, but a bit of a signs of them sort of plateauing in the week when they lost 3-1 at Barnsley. They were well beaten there at Barnsley. Looked a little bit outclassed, and I can see that being the, you know, the case again this weekend when they play Sheffield Wednesday.
Okay, thanks very much, Dan.
You're welcome.
Great to hear from Dan Charles, as always, his thoughts on the EFL. There's more of it on the Racing Post Sport website. Head over there and check it out. Mark, let's get through four of your best bets from for this weekend, and we'll start with the prop shop.
Yeah, the only one that won last week of the best bets was the prop shot. So we are on a very good run on the old shots on target. It's Kulusevski last week. I'm going for your pal. You mentioned him earlier on, but Darwin Nunez to have over 1.5 shots on target. Happened in 3 of his last 4 starts. And I think, obviously, playing Bournemouth is one of the easier games on the calendar, even though they have improved lately. And he's shot volume just so high. I think only Mitrovic in the Premier League averages more shots. And hopefully Liverpool can have a lot of attempts, and Nunez can get over 1.5.
Yeah, he's been finding plenty of winners in the shot on target market this year. How about a long shot for this weekend?
I was just looking at Arsenal to beat Fulham 2-1, which kind of ties into the fact that I tipped Arsenal obviously to win by one goal. If you look at Fulham's defeats against the top 4 this season, I mean, it's probably, just coincidence. But 4 of their 5 games against the top 4 have been 2-1 defeats. So they are a team that stay in matches, don't get absolutely tonked. And Arsenal have only kept 2 clean sheets in their last 9. I was speaking before that game against Sporting in Lisbon. So the potential is there for them to at least concede.
Let's take a look at the treble.
Yeah, 2 of these we've already mentioned, so I won't go over it in great detail. I just think Brighton are absolutely in the Champions League hunt. I think they're a very good team, so I'm going for them to win at Elland Road. Just not sure if Leeds have got that firepower at the moment. Think that Man City in under 3.5 goals looks to be a solid play away to Crystal Palace. And Napoli to beat Atalanta. I mean, last week was just a bit of a blip, really, for Napoli. Lose it and lost an absolutely great goal as well against Lazio. I think that maybe they need the blinkers on because it's getting a bit easy for them in Serie A, but they won't want to go into their Champions League game against Eintracht Frankfurt having lost 2 in a row. So I'm expecting to see more focus from Napoli. So Napoli to beat Atalanta, Brighton to beat Leeds, Man City and under 3.5 goals against Crystal Palace.
I like the sound of that. We'll finish off this week's episode of Bets Club with your nap.
Yeah, just repeating myself again, but it's Man City to win and under 3.5 goals against Crystal Palace. Palace, desperately short of firepower. Man City just plodding their way through a lot of games. Phil Foden's in fine form, so I expect them to win, but no real need for them to go and run up a cricket score, particularly since they've got a Champions League game. A very important one against Leipzig in the midweek as well. So expecting a few changes and City to win the game comfortably, but not in a chaotic game with loads of goals.
There we go. Plenty to look forward to for the rest of this week. We'll be back again next Thursday for another episode of Bet Club, where we'll be talking to Mark and Dan. Please remember, there's been lots of selections put up in this week's episode. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. Stay safe, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.